Hello, my name's Kate Rawls and I'm interviewing you for the Wellcome Trust as you're taking part in Anthony Gormley's new artwork, One and Other. The date today is the 16th of August 2009 and the time is 12:20 a.m. If I can please ask you to state your full name, your date of birth and where you come from.
My name's Robert Moore. My date of birth is the 6th of April 1956 and I come from Sussex, Crawley in fact.
And how are you today?
Fighting fit and very nervous.
Aww. Understandably. What was it that motivated you to take part in One Another?
I went up to Newcastle to see the Great North Run, and while I was up there I saw the Angel of the North and I was absolutely blown away by it. And a minor detail, someone had graffitied my brother's name on it. The same name as my brother on it. And so I thought that's such a wonderful thing. And then last year, I think it was, went up to Crosby, is it? And other places, and saw that, and that actually moved me to tears. Mm. And then after that, I was aware of the fourth plinth, the competition for the fourth plinth. I saw that Anthony Gormley had a proposal for it, and I think he outlined what his proposal was then. And I thought, I might like to take part in that. And then I was aware that the entries had been invited, I put my name in for it. I thought I was going to have a nice quiet hour just standing around doing nothing and people ignoring me, but it's got a bit bigger than that, so I'm getting panicky now.
How did you decide how to use your hour on the plinth?
I tried several things. First off, on the very first day, I sidled up next to Anthony Gormley and said to him, what sort of thing are you expecting from people? And it was a mistake me asking that, because he doesn't expect anything from anyone. He just wants to see what happens, I think. So at that point I realised I was on my own. I had to work it out for myself. So originally I was going to stand there and be me, you know, and then I thought, well, actually that's not being me standing there doing nothing. I'm quite talkative usually, although today I've been very quiet and reserved because I've been so nervous about it. That's what I thought. I thought I'd make some noise, you know, do noisy things, but I think I'm probably going to be fairly quiet up there, you know. It's still fairly flowing, so there'll be sound is the most of it, but maybe there's a tribute to Anthony Gormley in there somewhere.
Would you like to describe what you're going to do on the plinth tonight?
Yeah, just a few things. I've been looking at other people doing things, and I've been quite, not disparaging isn't the right word, but there's been lots of people that come up there and just recited poetry, but no one could hear them. Well, you could on the internet, but you couldn't hear them in the square. And so tonight I'm going to recite some poetry, which I haven't done for 40 years. So we'll see how I get on with a bit of that, and there'll be something else, and I've got to switch this phone off. Yes, I'm just trying to think what else I'll do. There'll be some music playing, which are tunes that I like. Hopefully other people would like them. I might do a bit of dad dancing, you know, because I've got two daughters who are out there, so embarrassing dad and all that. That's about it, really. We'll see.
Can I ask you to say a little bit about yourself? What springs to mind first when I ask that?
Well, first off, my age, actually, 53. I'm married. I've been married, married to my childhood sweetheart, and we're still married, Jan. Got two grown-up daughters now, 30 and 28. I always think of myself as being typically English, typically British, typically European, typically a person of the world, and I'm probably none of those. But I think that's one of the things, we're all typical, and that's the thing. I think this is about One Another, actually. Loads of people have been up there doing things. I've been amazed how many people have had the same idea, or I've had an idea thinking I was unique, and then someone else has done exactly that, and suddenly makes you realise we're actually tiny, tiny little parts, and every one of us is completely unique, but we've got loads of things that are in common. So that's the sort of thing that I've learning from this art project, believe it or not. Sounds a bit Weird. What else about me? I've been fully employed all my life. That's probably a bad thing these days. Employers don't seem to want people that have worked with one company all their lives. Very unfashionable. So I'm quite looking forward to finishing work at some point. What else? I enjoy cycling. I go cycling every week. Write a blog about it. I'm not a good cyclist, but I enjoy being out on the bike in the countryside. So I think there's probably, I could keep talking for hours actually, but I won't. You'll run out of space.
What do you work as?
I work here in IT for a bank, which is probably not popular at the moment, but I don't have a very high opinion of banks, funny enough. And I was originally going to do a piece slagging off banks, but I've decided I'm not going to do that now, as they don't warrant it. They're not worth the effort. And I've always worked in IT for what started off as a nice small little bank that was very friendly, nice group of people, and now I work for a very big one, and the people around me are quite nice, and I'm sure everyone else in the whole bank is very nice, but I don't feel like I'm part of something very nice anymore. So I'm so jaundiced. It's my age, I tell you.
And what's important for you moving forwards?
Ooh, I wish you hadn't said moving forwards. That's one of these buzz phrases that I don't like. But moving forwards, it's to stop being grumpy. I have been so grumpy for probably 4 or 5 years now, which is another reason why I'm not going to do the slagging off the banks business on there, because I think that's just me being grumpy again, and I know that's what I am and I have been, but maybe I can use this as a turning point to be cheerful, Bob, you know, like I used to be. Also just hoping that I can afford to retire at some point in the next few years, and just enjoy, or carry on enjoying my life. That was it. I don't think any more further forward than that.
Do you know, going backwards in that case, do you know much about your family history?
Not a whole lot. I mean, my dad's actually here tonight. Unfortunately, I lost my mum 5 years ago now. Yes, 5 years ago, nearly. And so he's an engineer, which is quite a rare thing these days, engineers. They seem to be thinner on the ground in this country. His father was the proper job for man. He was an engine driver. So both my dad and I have had days driving steam engines. Further back from that, great-grandfather worked on the railway. I suspect my great-great-grandfather worked on the railway, although I don't really know too much back that far. I describe myself as working class. My family background is working class. On my mum's side, yeah, she comes from Birkenhead. I remember her father worked in the docks, and I mean, that was an environment where people, they didn't know whether they were working from one day to the next. Every morning they'd have to go down to the dock to see whether they'd get selected to have a job for the day, which I don't see how you can plan your life when you're living in that kind of thing. And I'm very pro-unions because of things like that. Unions have managed to get better and better working conditions for working people, but they're being eroded at the moment, and I'm annoyed that people like myself and my generation have let this happen. We're letting people get away with murder now.
And your two children, would you like to say a little bit about them?
Well, they're the most beautiful girls in the world. Sorry. you can have a look at them. They're fantastically... They're wonderful children, actually. You know, like, people have children and they don't sleep at night and things like that. Well, ours were always perfectly good little children. Absolutely wonderful toddlers, little girls, even the teenagers. I mean, teenagers have awkward bits, but my wife and I sort of, we know that. We were teenagers ourselves once, and we always said the important thing was to get through the teenage years and still be friends with our kids, and that's exactly what happened. We came out of their teenage years and we're really good friends. So much so that I suspect we'd all want to live in one big house, you know, in the country. But, you know, sort of thing, you know, which I don't, a lot of families can't seem to wait to disintegrate, but I think they'd actually want to be part of a whole. Don't have any grandchildren yet. But, might be nice. Who knows? But no pressure. So.
And you're going from the plinth tonight.
Yep.
Who have you got watching and who have you got with you?
Well, I've got my dad, I've got my wife Janice, my girls Alison and Louise, and Darren, boyfriend there. Got a very long-term friend, Mr. Boyk. It's not his real name, but that's what we've known him as for donkey's years, or Monsieur Le Boyk. And his wife, who's also a long-term friend. Oh, I've forgotten Denise, who's the wife, and well, she's a very long-term friend, and the wife of probably my longest-standing friend from back when I was about 12, Terry. He's unfortunately not with us tonight because he's playing golf very early. No, in fact, he's away for a golf weekend, so he's gutted to miss this. I think he might be watching on the internet when I'm on there. And I've forgotten someone. Oh, an old friend of my wife's, Pat, a very long-term friend of hers, in fact. And I'm still missing someone. Oh, and a couple of my youngest daughter's friends, the two Katies. She calls them me Julies, which confuses people.
And how about sort of your beliefs, religious beliefs, or anything like that? Do you?
Yeah, my beliefs are in the individual, that each one of us is responsible for ourselves. We cannot and must not hide behind some. I can't think of the word here, system of belief, something that excuses. You can't do something bad and then get absolution from someone. That's just not right. You've got to be responsible for the action you took in the first place and not expect forgiveness further on down the line. Don't expect forgiveness, don't do the wrong. So I'm quite adamant about that. Sorry, I come across a bit strong. That doesn't mean I can come across as being anti-religious, and I'm not actually anti-religion. It's very important for people who are very religious, or religious to any extent, to understand that just because they have that, it's not to be imposed on anyone else. It's wrong to force your children into a religion. I know the argument is that, oh, you have to educate and teach them, bring them up to it, but if you brainwash them into it, then they're going to say, oh yes, this was the right thing for me. I don't think you should do that myself.
Very cool. And any other kind of interests or hobbies or things that you think make up you?
Make up me. Cycling at the moment. I've been doing that for the last 5-6 years. Really enjoy it. Got a nice group of people that I cycle regularly with. It's not competitive, it's just social cycling. I like taking photographs. Sorry, art. I wouldn't call myself any kind of expert. My knowledge of art is minimal, but I enjoy experiencing it. I enjoy looking at things, trying to understand them. Music is. I'm 53. I'm part of a generation that has always had a radio or radiogram or stereo or CDs, or now it's MP3s. There's always been music in the background, so I think that's going to be reflected when I'm on the plinth tonight most of the time. Enjoy listening to music, and that's another thing, like art, about the subjective. You get people, they're very pro one type of music, very anti something else, and the same happens with types of art. You have people more into the classical art, people more into the modern art and stuff. In fact, a lot of people just cannot understand modern art at all, and I probably don't necessarily understand it, but I do actually love a lot of it. So yeah, that was another one of my interests, was music. I wish I could play it, but I can't. I used to be in a marching band years ago. I had toyed with trying to get all my mates that were in the marching band to come up here with instruments and march across the square, and I was going to play as well. I used to play a glockenspiel, it's called a bell lyre, but it's a glockenspiel on a stick. German marching bands used to have them. And I can't play music as such. I could remember the note sequence because it was a set of letters, and I have some sense of timing, And I used to be pretty good at it, actually. I won a couple of solo competitions.
What band were you in?
Well, it's marching band. It was we were actually originally in a youth organisation called the Nautical Training Corps, which the idea is you gives people a frame, children a framework. There's an element of discipline in there, and discipline sounds like a bad word these days, but discipline in terms of knowing when to obey orders, you know, who would give orders, who should obey them. That doesn't sound right, but you know, that framework. And then the band was formed as part of that, just one of the activities that we did within there, because we did other things like doing rifle shooting, tying knots, learning set flags, because I did toy with doing semaphore flags, signalling, especially with Nelson up on his column there. So yeah, we're in the marching band. So that was a traineeship superb I used to be in. Then we all got too old. When we were 18, we were too old to remain. We had to become petty officers within that organisation, and they had a rule that you could have no more than two petty officers in a one of the ship's marching bands. Well, we all loved the band, that was the primary reason we were in there. So we were afraid we all left, which is probably a little bit naughty, but we formed our own band, which used old ex-RAF uniforms, and that was Crawley Corps of Drums. And that was just a great time. We had quite a big band. I think we had about 40, 45 people at full strength, you know, and I used to boast then we could do Crawley Carnival, which was, we'd have to play continuously for about an hour or so, marching round, and I could play all the way through there without repeating any tune, because I knew so many tunes. So that was a great day. Sorry, I'm reliving my past now. I've got to go forward. Can't go backwards. That was marching bands anyway. Yeah. Actually, they can have. I know they've had it. There's some Canadian marching bands in Trafalgar Square early August, I think. I thought I saw something on the back of the one and other leaflets.
Yeah, there was a Canada Day.
There, Canada Day. Yeah. And did they have marching bands there?
I think they did.
Because the American marching bands, they got a slightly different style to. The marching band in our day was what would be traditional, what I would call traditional British marching band, a military marching band, which would basically play music that you would march to. The idea with a band, it makes it easier getting from A to B. You've got something to listen to, you know, while you're marching with a full pack sort of thing, you know. So it's militaristic in nature, although I'm not militaristic in nature myself. Whereas the Americans, North American, it's more of the entertainment, the razzmatazz. And look, for instance, the instrument I played, which I would hold with one hand and hold a hammer in the other, which would be playing the note. So I'm playing one-handed, so I can only play effectively a single note, strike a single note at a time. The Americans, they turned it down and they would be playing proper xylophones, and I've forgotten the wooden one. I don't know, Glockenspiels. They'd play horizontal ones, and they'd be playing them with two, four, or even six sticks. So very good, very musical, but they weren't marching. Mm. You know, I was proud of the fact that my music was going wherever the rest of the band was. For the American version of that, the band, the brass and the drums, most of the drums, not all of them, would be moving around the field in quite complex movements, which very good, very spectacular, but wasn't quite what I liked. I preferred the discipline, I suppose, of the marching and the counter marching and stuff. But, God blimey, I haven't talked about the bands for years.
And was that in Crawley? Did you grow up in Crawley?
Yeah, although I was actually born in Manchester. My dad's job took him, he used to work in radar, and took him from Manchester Airport, which I still call Ringway. It's not been called Ringway for years. And I was actually christened in a chapel, which is now within the confines of the airport up there. Haven't been back there for years. And yeah, I think I was four when I moved down to Crawley. And after about 2 years at school, my northern accent that I did have a Union accent, had been, I always say beaten out of me. It wasn't. You're exposed when you go to school. You're exposed to an environment where everyone else is speaking a particular way, and you tend to adapt or adopt that way of speaking yourself. So I, to all my family, I just sound like a right cockney, but, which I'm not. I've got a Crawley accent. I'm quite conscious of it. To the people up north, it sounds like a cockney, but to a cockney, it sounds like some southerner. So.
Who are you doing this for today?
Do you know what? I think it's me. I've been. This is a question I have been asking myself. I'd like to think it's not, but it must be ego. It can't be anything else. Why did I volunteer to do this? I know I did think it would just be a quiet hour, you know, with everyone just walking by and completely ignoring you. But it's something a lot bigger now. So it's got to be ego. It's got to be down to doing something. Like, I've got to mention this. Friends would laugh if they ever heard this. But my mum died, as I said, 5 years ago. And then I was 50, after 3 years ago, obviously, in 2006. And I decided I was going to do something to mark that passing. So I rode my bike from John O'Groats to Land's End. And that's typical of me as well. Because although, you know, I haven't chosen to do that, it's just that's the big cycle challenge, if you like, in this country, i.e. the furthest distance you can ride. But rather than do it like everyone else does, the majority of people do it from Land's End to John O'Groats, because they'll have the wind behind them and things like that. And I just couldn't. I just wanted to be different. And this is where this ego thing comes in. You think you always think you're different to everyone else, you know. And I thought, well, I'm going to do it from the top to the bottom, because that's downhill. So that was my logic. It has to be downhill from the top to the bottom. I really enjoyed it. It was very, very hard to go back to work or to settle back into work after it. In fact, to settle back into normal life, I didn't rush. I think I spent 3 weeks doing it. And my wife was there in the car. She was like leapfrogging ahead each day, booking a bed and breakfast and then phoning me up, telling me where to get to. And then we'd meet up in the evening, B&B, and then the next day, same again. So we had 3 weeks, best part of, doing that. And fried breakfast every morning, that does get you down actually when you eat that many. But I was doing the exercise to use it up. I've lost my point of where I was going with that. But yeah, it's just, I do these kind of things every now and again. So that was, like, as I said, 3 years ago. I'm sure there's other things where I've done, people said, why is he doing that? You know, oh, that's strange, fancy doing that. I've had my brother, for instance, who thinks I'm completely mad for doing this. But he may well be watching it on the internet. He's in the Bahamas or something. No, Barbados. He's on holiday, and if he can get somewhere where it's got net access, he says he's going to watch it. So it's interested him, even if he doesn't understand it. But I think it's just doing things. Surely that's what people want to do with their lives: do something different every now and again. You know, I'm no great expert at any one thing, but I like to think I enjoy whatever it is I touch or do. And I'll try something, you know, every now and again. So that's what I'm doing. I'm trying something. So.
Can I ask how you met your childhood sweetheart?
That was through the band, actually. Mm. And it's funny because my best mate, who I also met through the band, and then we were at school. Actually, my best mate is my wife, thinking about it. But my second best mate, Terry, his dad ran the band. And he always said, because he'd had experience with previous bands, he said, I know that some of you, you'll find boyfriends, girlfriends here, and you'll get married, because I've seen it before. And there's a little group of us, this next a week's time, we're going to, oh, don't broadcast this, we're going to a surprise 50th birthday party for someone else who was in the band, a little bit younger than us, obviously. And basically, there's a group of six of us. All six of us were in the band. All six of us met when we were in the band. And so it's three couples that got married based on that. That's why I talk about the band so much. Oh, weird. But that's how we met, really. So we would have been, 13, 14, something like that. When probably started becoming aware of each other around about that time. And I think I put my arm around her for the first time probably about 14 or 15.
Sounds idyllic.
I don't know. I think there's a history of it in the families. I mean, her mum and dad they were still together all those years. My mum and dad, uh, my In fact, my mum and dad actually met even younger. About the same age. My mum was 14 when she was evacuated from Birkenhead to Chester, where my dad lived. And she moved into being with a family just down the road from where my dad was. And in those days, communities were much more integrated than they are now. Yeah, most people, they might know the next door neighbour, but they probably don't know the other side of that. Mm. Less and less further away. Well, back then, when my dad said, I just think of it as a housing estate, he still calls it a village. And it was that everyone knew everyone, really. And so, you know, when these new, well, my mum and her sister moved in, her younger sister, Lolly, when they moved in, my dad would have sort of been aware of that. Not necessarily thinking, oh, it was a girlfriend, but, mm-hmm. you know, just in terms of someone new there, and they'd all be going to school together, and she got on well with my aunts and things like that. And then I think it was... I think it was actually VE night that my dad always says, well, that was the first time they sort of, they went out separately and they came back together. So he puts that down as the start of their relationship.
Mm-hmm. So. Is there anything else that you would like to say about taking part in one another today and how you're feeling about it now? Is it?
I've actually relaxed a bit. Actually, the cup of tea made me relax a bit, but I needed that. I hadn't realised there was going to be this part of it and this oral history, and because when I was reading the not disclaimer, but you know, the formwork, I suddenly twigged. Oh, right, you've got something that says an oral history, which will be available to people, and you know, it's that old Andy Warhol 15 minutes of fame, because that's one of the ideas I had was, well, we've got 4 15 minutes of fame up there, and I sort of loosely split what I'm doing into four, but. In a way, it's that thing I said about ego coming up again. But in a way, I think it's important for ordinary people to just talk and be heard, and not necessarily by everyone, or you know, but just at an honest level though as well. Not pretending to be something different. So I'm going to go on the plinth and pretend to be something different.
Very good. Thank you very much.
That's all right. You got me relaxed. I'm talking so much. Actually, I did tell my wife. She was